Audio is pretty good. The video is a little choppy, but the audio has not been so far.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our returning guest is Joshua Humphrey. We call him our resident legal expert, and he's here to talk to us about the Supreme Court, which, as you might know, is going to get all fucked up.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Order in the court.
And Nick Glover.
I object.
And today we are joined by our favorite lawyer, Joshua Mark Humphrey. Hello, wow. Joshua.
Hello, everybody. Objection.
Ace attorney style.
Ace attorney style. Objection. Yeah. We've had Joshua on before to talk legal matters. We joke that he's our in-house counsel. He is not. I just want to make that very clear. Legally, he is not our in-house counsel, but he is our favorite lawyer friend to have on the show.
Oh, and you're
just the best. And we decided that we need to talk about the Supreme Court of the United States.
What a fantastic non-consequential topic you've asked me to talk about.
Yes, nothing consequential MBD. Here. So we
should
realized,
totally be able to cover this in a 30-minute podcast,
right?
Don't you think?
So Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Trump's nominee is a woman named Amy Coney Barrett. She has been a justice for, I mean, not that long because
like
she's young, but
she's been a judge, not a justice.
She's been a judge for, just 2.5 years. She's a young woman. She is a Catholic. She is a devout Catholic and a member of a sect called the People of Promise, People of Praise.
People of Praise.
Which is some, I will say sect to be polite. Some say cult. But we realized we had a bunch of questions about kind of, you know, what this might mean for the country. Obviously, most liberals are panicking, thinking that this means that every single civil rights decision made in the last 40 years is about to be overturned. We thought that we would ask you some questions to see if our panic is founded or if maybe things are a little less seen. How's that sound to you?
That sounds great to me. I'll try to
All
answer
right.
your questions in as thorough manner as possible.
That sounds great. All right. So I will tell you which of us, I'm just going to read the questions, but we have them in this thread here. So we were wondering what the fundamental differences are in the approach a conservative justice versus a liberal justice would take toward the Constitution.
So I think this has a fairly long answer, and we could probably spend an hour just talking about it itself.
Right, they teach whole classes on it, right?
Yeah, probably.
Right. So, like, when I get this question, or when I think about this question, and I think, like, both, like, conservative, liberal, however you fall on the political spectrum, mm-hmm. most people, if they're going to be a judge, they're going to say they're going to follow the Constitution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And probably they'll tell you the truth when they say that to you, but that comes with a lot of provisos, a lot of different like interpretive methods. So one of the things that I usually characterize, like when talking about the Constitution and like interpretation of it, there's things like in the Constitution that are like hardline rules that are easy to interpret. A rule in the Constitution is something like the president has to be 35. There's no interpretive, like you don't have to go very far to get anywhere with
there's
that.
There's no wriggle room.
Right. So it's very easy to interpret.
35 Earth years.
Yeah, right?
I mean, if the president was born on February 29th.
Right.
When we have moon bases, this might become an issue, but
okay.
Until then.
Yeah. Like, if you wanted to play constitutional hardball with that, there's like, you can talk about like, well, do they have to be 35 when they're sworn in? What about when they're running for the president? Stuff like that, right?
Yep.
Sure.
But it's much clearer, right? It's a rule. But then there are like standards within the Constitution as well. So that's like, due process of law is a standard. Like, no one shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. What does due process mean? You might think it's different. I might think it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And where that is actually interpreted is where we kind of come down on. There's been a legal trend in the last, I guess it's like maybe quarter of a century, half century, right? Where the conservative method is usually like originalist. Amy Coney Barrett is definitely like she self-identifies as an originalist person that interprets the Constitution that way. And what originalists tend to do is they tend to look at like when the Constitution was enacted, what people were talking about at that time, dictionaries, what do the Federalist Papers say? Mm-hmm. And that sounds very good on its surface.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it's a very good talking point, but usually anybody can do that. I can look back at the what the founders said about the Constitution. I can look at back what the Federalist Papers say. I can look back at multiple things and kind of pick and choose what I want to use mm-hmm. and interpret. And that's, I think, the main criticism of original interpretation is it's really just like a way to coach your ideas in language from 200, 250 years ago.
Is that like when people say, well, sure, they said you had the right to bear arms, but they meant muskets, so that's all you can have.
Yeah, you could like do like
that's like
that.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, that's kind of reductionist it's, in that way. Yeah.
But there's like a historical context or a thought process context mm-hmm. involved when you're considering or interpreting
right.
the Constitution.
Right. So like you bring up guns and like the main precedent that Scalia wrote that was agreed to by 5-4 of the court was Heller, and Heller is all about the Second Amendment. In both the majority, which was a conservative majority, and the minority, they were both talking originalist arguments mm-hmm. in both of those things. It's just that one had 5 votes, the other had 4 votes, right?
Yeah.
Which is the actual real interpretation, like what people thought. I don't know. We don't know.
You need Bill and Ted
to go back into the past.
Yeah.
why didn't they bring, I suppose, no, did any of the original like founders play any instruments? I don't know. Maybe somebody looked that up.
If only.
Whereas like, I guess if you want to consider it like the liberal interpretation as I think more along the lines of like just legal realism, it's taking like what is modern policy, what is modern like, you know, ways of looking at the Constitution and sort of like doing it that way. Like this is the real life context of what the Constitution does, right? And there's in both of these methods, there's multiple ways to criticize them. That's part of the process, I guess you would say in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But Amy Coney Barrett, to bring us back to what we're talking about, she's mm-hmm. definitely like an originalist. That's
okay.
What she self-identifies as.
Okay. Okay.
So that would put us at 6-3 originalists versus non-original.
Yeah, and I think it's important to realize that some of the justices don't identify that way at all. Like I think Gorsuch does. I think Thomas maybe does. But I don't know if like Alito or say John Roberts like mm-hmm. identifies that way. Alito definitely like has a conservative bent to his interpretations, and I think he mm-hmm. would use whatever tools he had at his disposal to get there, whether they'd be originalism or not.
So, okay, that leads me to this. So how does a judge's religion come into play for their job? Because we're guessing that ideally it shouldn't interfere, but obviously some people's religion is going to have an effect on what they consider to be, you know, moral or right or just. And if they use their religion as a basis for making decisions rather than the law, are there any consequences or is that allowed?
I mean, in terms of consequences, like for this, I would say there's probably not a lot of them. The methods that we have for punishing or like holding judges to account is basically, at least federal judges anyway, is like through the impeachment power.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the president can be impeached, so too can federal judges. It's the same standards that apply. The House impeaches them by a simple majority vote, and then the Senate has to vote to convict them by 2/3 majority. Mm-hmm. That's happened. The House has impeached one Supreme Court justice.
Interesting. I bet it was a long time ago, too.
Yeah, it was Samuel Chase back in 1805.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. Yeah. Okay.
And the Senate didn't convict him. I think he remained in power.
Interesting.
Where he was.
Yeah. Okay.
So like there might be some like ethical things. Mm-hmm. Like this is mainly in the lower federal judiciary because judges do have rules that they have to follow, right? And I don't know all the extent of those things, but like the Supreme Court, once you're on the Supreme Court, like you're the last stop, basically. Mm-hmm. There's not like an ethics board for the Supreme Court.
Oh, there's not. That's interesting.
That's mainly just what Congress decides to do.
The ethics board is Congress to some degree. Then.
Yeah. And like whether there's the political power or willpower to do anything on that line is it's going to vary from Congress to Congress.
So really, there's nothing stopping not just Barrett, but any of the other current Supreme Court justices from saying, you know, that as a Jew, as a Catholic, you know, I feel that, you know, this should be the ruling.
Yeah, I don't think you will see that in any kind of rulings that come down for like Amy Coney Barrett or any of the other justices.
It wouldn't be explicit.
Definitely. Yeah, it wouldn't be explicit. I mean, all judges are, and I would say like judges are trained to like, you know, they're going to talk about the law and like Amy Coney Barrett might find different ways to coach however she wants the outcome for what have you, like whether it's Roe v. Wade, whether it's the ACA, which I think are the big concerns right now. Like in terms of what's going on right now, like I think Amy Coney Barrett, like she's been hired to do a job. Like Donald Trump is only appointing judges that he thinks will overturn like Roe v. Wade, will get the policy outcomes that the GOP wants. That's what's happening right now. And I think you should probably take him as his word that that's probably the goal here. Mm-hmm. And not to say that there won't be surprises. All judges, all justices are human beings and they have their own quirks about like where they fall in all these lines. I mean, Gorsuch is a good example. Like, you know, he's a purported originalist, and like I think he takes that seriously, and he will go where it leads him. And sometimes it leads to more, I guess you would say, liberal outcomes because it can, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not if you're like taking like and looking at originalist doctrine and originalist thinking, it just can lead to liberal outcomes as well. And he's fine with that.
Okay. Along those lines, so the People of Praise are a particular sect of Catholicism that have a strong, I'm going to say misogynistic bent, just because they have that whole sense of like women are subservient, you know, your husband, it's, you know, God, husband, you know, or God, priest, husband, you know, then you. Yeah, is there any concern? I know that, I realize that this is an argument that was made against Kennedy for the presidency back in the 60s that was like, can we have a Catholic president? Because won't the Pope just tell him what to do? But kind of, I'm asking, like, is there any concern that that she will feel the need to go along with men on the bench or with men in her life?
I mean, I think that is possibly a concern. I don't know all the ins and outs of the People of Praise's like doctrine, right? I think what we want to worry about in any case with any judge is that they are inserting those beliefs, whether they be religious, whether they even be non-religious, because you can get those in there too.
Yeah.
And that
absolutely
mucking up the process. And like I said before, and it goes back to what we were just talking about, is like she was hired for a job. We know where she's going already. Religion, I don't even think religion is a huge part of it beyond like during her hearing in 2017, I think it was, is like, you know, Dianne Feinstein got a lot of flack for like questioning her religion. That's kind of like, and you know you saw it a little bit now, like over the past weekend or so, where like, you know, the right side was like just aching for people to attack her religion, and like I to a certain extent I don't really think anybody is really concerned or should be concerned about her religion. It's really you should be concerned about like the outcomes that are going to happen with her.
Yeah,
and maybe that has some religious bent too, but I don't know where it starts and I don't know where it ends.
So I mean, it's fair to say that her religion in this particular case is irrelevant, because no matter what religion she is, she was picked because it is believed she's willing to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And so, she's willing to overturn the Affordable Care Act ruling.
Yeah, that's what all the indications that we have from her is where she's leaning toward, right? And that's what Trump said. Trump said that he's only putting forward judges that are going to do that.
Right.
And, you know, Joshua Hawley, I can't remember what senator he is, but like he's only going to vote for judges or justices that will overturn Roe v. Wade. So you got senators saying it too, like, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so ridiculous.
I find it really interesting that it's the evangelical right that's really pushing this, you know, so hard. And I find it really interesting that for a group of people who genuinely believe that women are subservient to men, that all of the justices put forward were women. And I'm wondering if that was Trump trying to, I guess, be like, oh, well, they want women. We'll just give them just whatever. If it's a woman, then they'll be happy. You know, they won't question.
Well, I think part of the game plan was always for a woman to write the opinion that overturns Roe.
Because they think that gives it more weight.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was Mark Joseph Stern, who writes for Slate. I was listening to a podcast mm-hmm. that he was doing, and he referred to her as like the beard for the GOP.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So, okay. So Roe gets overturned. Let's just say we're in that world and it gets overturned. Can we put it back? I mean, let's like eventually, I know it'll be a while, but eventually, if there's a court that is willing to do that, I have another question relating to that later. But I mean, is that final? Is that it? Like is anything ever done in America?
There's a no, nothing is ever done in America. the court likes to, I can't remember who said this, I can't remember who the original quote was, but like the court isn't. Is it not? How's it go? The court isn't right. Oh, I can't remember what the quote is. Something else. Anyway, like these can be like changed over time.
Sure.
That's one of the particulars about constitutional law is that even though there is precedent, it like wanes and it has its ups and downs.
So
over the course of time,
if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, and I think the odds are very high that happens. Assuming she gets seated, which is almost for certain going to take place. Mm-hmm. If Roe v. Wade gets overturned, is it more likely the court is going to basically say, okay, that's it, abortion is illegal, or is it more going to be more likely they're going to push it back to states
and
states determine whether or not abortion is legal within their state?
What I think is probably going to be more along those lines, yes, Tim. I don't think you will see like – an explicit, this is now outlawed. It's going to be like, it is basically just outlawed from like the restrictions that are put on it, or it's going mm-hmm. to be left to the states in some way. And I think what it will, because what won't be overturned in whatever this decision is like the right to privacy, which is really what the right in Roe is. It's a right mm-hmm. to like your own private autonomy. And however that goes, and one of them is abortion. And so you will, that I think that right will be maintained in some way, but then it's going to be pitched back to the states in some manner. I can't tell you how it's going to be, but I imagine it would go.
So essentially states that are controlled by Republicans, probably abortion would be made illegal very, very quickly. And states that are controlled by Democrats would probably not go that direction. So if you live in California or New York, you're fine. But if you live in
Minnesota
or Minnesota for now, but if you live in, say, Ohio right now,
Alabama,
you'd be screwed.
Or but to give you your, to give you a silver screwed. Lining, to give you a silver lining. So if, so that right to privacy remains right within whatever that opinion is, mm-hmm. then it could be revived by a court in the future. Mm-hmm. For example,
mm-hmm. nothing's ever done.
the court never really overturns its precedent. They just like realize that, oh, you know what? We just found this new thing.
But isn't it true that Amy Comey Barrett has written some things suggesting that the court can overturn itself?
I think she has written some stuff about like precedent and stuff, but mm-hmm. I don't know the extent of those things.
In order for it to get to that point, to overturn it or to change that, first it has to make its way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, someone has to make the case.
And so I imagine you would see more conservative states trying to find examples of it, like the Scopes trial, trying to cause mm-hmm. a case to get to that point so they can push it there so that they can then get the ruling they want. What's the, what, like, assuming there was nothing like that in the works now, how long could that take if it went super fast?
I mean, it can probably take anywhere from, I don't know, 6 months to a year before you would see something like that.
Yeah,
that's what maybe I was faster. Thinking. That's a hard timeline for me to.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No,
well, they don't. Sure. They meet at different times of the year. They don't. They're not meeting every day. You know, they're not in session every day.
Well, and it has to go to like a federal district court. It has to then go to a court of appeal, and then it has to go to the Supreme Court, right? Yep. And usually, when it goes to the Supreme Court, it's because there's a circuit split somewhere. Like the First Circuit thinks differently from the Third Circuit, and then the Supreme Court is then judging like the split in the circuits, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what happens in situations like that. I don't know how much more of a something would be fast tracked like that.
Sure.
However way, like squirrely ways, right? You're going to see something about the ACA relatively soon, though, because that's already at the court
for being decided. Right.
That's in their, I think, October or November term, like right after the election, I think.
So how do you feel about the, I've heard the Democrats proposing and a lot of Democrat friends proposing that we should pack the court and that we should add seats. And especially if Biden wins this election, that then what we should do is make it so we can have more justices and pack the court with more. Do you think that adding seats is a good idea to the Supreme Court, or should it always stay at 9?
I thought a lot about this, and, what I think is, and it goes back to your other question about like, can this be revived, right? Can Roe be revived if it's overturned? Like one of the ways to like stop Roe being overturned is you add people to the Supreme Court, right? You just expand the court. And that's one way to do it. Personally, just in general, you can expand the court. You can do a lot of things with the court. It's mainly a function of statutory law. Like Congress decides the size of the court, how long justices serve. There isn't any like a limit on how long justices serves right now. The Constitution says, I think, good behavior under Article 3, which could be, I don't know, what's that mean? Another standard, right?
Exactly. Standard to debate.
Another standard. So like they can add people to the court. There's been people added to the court during, I think, six or seven, maybe eight times over the course of time. It hasn't happened in the last century or so. It's been at 9 for a long time. Basically, for the reasons that the House is still at 435 members, it's just through political inertia, basically. And no one wants to mess with the Supreme Court too much, right? Because, FDR was, made a lot of hay about packing the court back in his day. And to a certain extent, that threat worked for FDR, right? He never expanded the court, but he did like threaten to expand the court. And then this court started leaning much more toward FDR's way. And so we could just be at another juncture like that, where there's going to be threats to the court and increasing the size, and maybe the court will fall in line, maybe the court won't. But we are also in the middle of like what is a period of like constitutional hardball with the court. The GOP's been playing it for a long time. The Democrats have basically been playing catch up at almost every juncture. And now like the GOP is pretty brazenly saying, we're going to pack this court. They've already packed the court.
Right. They have, yeah.
What the Democrats would be doing would be unpacking the court from that influence.
Evening. Yeah.
So I guess I was under the impression that the size of the Supreme Court was something that was like, would require like a constitutional amendment or something like that, but it's all just legislated. Like it's set through, law. That's interesting. So that's a check that,
Is it even a law? I mean, the Constitution doesn't indicate how many people should be on the Supreme Court, which means Congress could add any number of seats they wanted.
Right. They could.
Or subtract seats.
Right? They could. The court has been shrunk and the court has been expanded over the course of time.
Interesting. If they shrank the court, when they shrank the court, was it like a first in, last out? Or was it like, did they draw names? Like, how did they get rid of somebody?
I think you just like, somebody retires and then you don't fill it.
Sure.
I mean, that's what happened essentially. I mean, it wasn't by statute, like, right? But when Merrick Garland was not seated after Scalia died, mm-hmm. right? They limited the court to 8 people for a year until Donald Trump was in and they allowed him to seat somebody.
So, okay, this is a question. And if you feel like you can't answer it, that's fine. I understand. But fair. I have read that Justice Kennedy's son gave a $1 billion loan to Trump to keep businesses afloat. And that it was soon after some papers got that information that Kennedy stepped down. That sounds like a crazy conspiracy theory to me. It also sounds extremely plausible in 2020. Both those things sound real. Do you think there was any shame? Like, do you think Kennedy stepped down to avoid an impeachment?
I don't think, I don't necessarily think he stepped out to avoid an impeachment. What I do think is that there is a lot of powerful interests that surround the court. Mm-hmm. There are corporate interests. There are, you know, political action committees. There are the Federalist Society, for example, who is basically deciding our judges right now. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things that, say, Democrats could do to combat this power grab by the GOP and inflating the court with, like, Republican justices is that they could pass laws that provide more transparency for the court. Like, where is this money coming from? Like, who's funding you? Where is it? Where is it coming from? Because we don't have a lot of good indications of, like, who's influencing the court, right? Mm. So that's one reason they could play political hardball.
Are they required to release their tax returns?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because that could be an interesting step. That's one of the things. You can't get a job if your credit rating is a certain level, right? Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's been talk of other reforms like through the years for the court. Like, I don't know exactly what the law says on like what they're supposed to be mm-hmm. transparent about. I'm sure mm-hmm. there's something somewhere, but if anybody knows more about that, please write to Tim.
Yeah, right.
But like reform in terms of reform matters, like, you know, like, making sure that they're releasing money, telling us where their conflicts of interest lie, recusing mm-hmm. themselves. I mean, it comes up every now and then that so-and-so justice owns a lot of stock in this company. And like mm-hmm. that knowledge has to come from somewhere. I think. But making that more publicly available and making things more transparent, like, what we know about the court is also just like behind closed doors a lot of the time. We just don't know what happens. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the allure and the romanticization of the court as this like political being, because it is sort of mysterious.
Yeah, and we have, like, to use dogs on
get rid of the mystery. Get rid of the mystery, it'll be a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had seen the argument made that like you had pointed out earlier, like really grilling Barrett.
Yeah.
On her way in is just like politically not a great move. It's just bad strategy. Like, she's basically a done deal at this point. Instead, they should use her interview process to ask her questions about the legality of Trump's behavior,
concrete things he's
doing, the Hatch Act, things like that, where they can say, like, well, you know, hey, look, you're a judge, you want to be appointed to the highest court of the land. Isn't this illegal? Isn't this illegal? Like, how do you feel about this? Isn't this a violation of that? Is there validity in that?
I think I've read a lot of the same things. I think there is some validity in that, because I think what the Democrats should probably be doing is painting this as an illegitimate process, right? We've had essentially, if we are to take the Republicans at their word, in terms of like, hey, you're not supposed to seat a justice in the last year before an election. Mm-hmm. Well,
the people should decide.
They got us once on it, and now they're getting us again on it. And so, like, they paint the process as legitimate in that way, mm-hmm. and then just grill her.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of talk about just like ignoring the hearings entirely.
I saw that. Yeah, that's
a possibility as well.
Scheduling programming against it that would require attention. Something I heard, like scheduling hearings for like all of Trump's accusers of sexual assault, have them in the court on that day in another place, you know, and things like that. Yeah.
And you know, I want to point out too that it's like it's very limited in what the Democrats can do because they're not in the majority. Like they don't have a lot of power. So like
but these are things
that they could try or at least be seen as trying.
Thank you so much. That was very informative and helpful.
Well, we should meet again in 6 months and see what happens.
Yes. Well, I promise. Well, if we have internet in our apocalypse bunker, we'll definitely see if we can get
together. I'm just going to say my personal opinion. This is my personal opinion is I hope if the Democrats actually take the White House and the Senate, they have the balls to do something. That's all I'm saying.
I was going to talk about this. My personal opinion is like, I think they should go ahead and just pack it. Like pack the court. Just do it.
I agree.
My personal opinion is like justices. Just do it.
Like, there's a lot of circuits. You get a justice for every circuit. Like, and like they're under, I think there's 11 or I can't remember 11 or 15 circuits.
Yeah.
And like get a judge for every circuit. Cause you got a couple of judges pulling double duty. Give them a break.
All the courts are so backlogged and so behind on work. There's plenty of reasons to want to add judges.
There's a lot of things that need to be like fixed with the federal judiciary. One of it's understaffed.
I feel like we've seen 5 years of they go low, we go high. It doesn't fucking work. Time to go low. Got to play them on their field. Otherwise, we're not even playing the same game. Okay, five questions. So because Joshua has been on our show many times before, he has five questions for us.
Hooray!
So Joshua, ask us your questions. We are very excited to answer them.
Oh, sure. Sorry, I didn't have
them. That's fine. Do you have them?
I didn't have them up in front of me. I would bring them up one second.
No worries.
Because I wrote those in the little message to Tim, and then I went about my daily life is what I did. But I have them up right now. And the first question, since we're talking about reform a little bit, right? I wanted to know, aside from SCOTUS reform, what is your number one reform to the U.S. system that you want should the Democrats take power in the spring or after the election?
So I was thinking about this when I saw the questions earlier, and I was trying to think of one change that would give me as many of the other changes as I want. Like, what's one thing you could change that would allow a lot of changes to happen? And I feel like it would be making a federal standard for voting ranked choice. I feel like if all elected officials, every position that you voted for someone on, you had an option where you weren't always feeling like you were voting for the lesser evil. We could take away a lot of the power that exists because of a two-party system, maybe, or at least it would let candidates, not play it safe as much and move things maybe a little bit away from this middle right.
We'd have a chance at some actual progressive policies and not just a centrist who's willing to make that promise.
I think it would improve voting turnout too, substantially. I don't know.
Tim, do you know what you would, yours? Do you
want me to healthcare reform, single payer.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. I mean, so much inequity in this country is driven by healthcare. That I think you basically need to just completely destroy our system and rebuild it.
I want all schools to be fully funded before the military gets to spend a dime. I think that if every public school in the United States has all the money they need, then we take whatever money's left over and we buy bombs. But if we're not taking care of kids and we're not taking care of teachers, then what's the fucking point of having a country that we're, defending with military?
Sure.
Whoa, like schools first, bombs second, still radical.
Yeah. I remember seeing a poster when I was in high school that was something like, it was some hippie thing that was like, the day that the government has to hold a bake sale to buy bombs and the schools are fully funded is a good day. And that's really stuck with me. Like, why, you know, fuck them. They're the ones killing people. Why should we have to be the ones begging for scraps? You know, like
what's yours, Joshua? Yeah. What would you?
Well, first, I like all these answers. I think healthcare is like one at the top of my list because I think there's so much that flows from like just having health people able to get healthcare when they need healthcare. And so like any of these are good options. Like if I had to pick like my one hobby horse would be like I would it's all voting rights. Just making sure that voting rights was just secured via some way, like a new Voting Rights Act, for example. Yeah. HR 1, which the Democrats like passed in the House, like right at the start, I want to see that like enacted. But I believe Mitch McConnell called it a Democratic power grab, even though it was just like guaranteeing the right to
vote. I can't wait for him to die. Okay. Yes.
I don't want him to die. I want a Mitch McConnell like meteor to fall out of the sky onto him.
I will 100% say it here. I hope Mitch McConnell dies.
All right. You heard it here on Geeks Without God.
Yeah, question two.
Question two. You've decided to rebrand the podcast. What is your new topic?
Ooh.
Your new theme.
I saw this question. I still don't know what my answer is. So.
Fuck the police. A show where we interview people about their interaction with the police. And so much like this show, how we bring on, we've had a few religious people to talk about, you know, them being religious or whatever, or even not them being religious. But, you know, like, I think we might have a few people who are like, I actually had a good interaction with the cops. And then we would try to talk to them to help them see why that actually wasn't true. And that the cops are always abusing their power. But it would basically be a show where regular people come on the show and explain to us a time that a cop overreached or abused their power or straight up, you know, abuse them and got the word out of all these little stories. It'd be like Ira Glass, but it would be little stories of all the times the cops abused you. And I think actually hearing that on a weekly basis, hearing 5 to 6 stories at a time might actually start to turn the tide, because most people just aren't hearing the, like, that every, it's that whole thing of like when the Me Too movement happened, it was like every woman you know has been sexually harassed. And a lot of guys were like, really? And we were like, yeah. I feel like for a lot of us, it's like every single person you know has been, the police have done something to them they shouldn't have done. They have either spoken to them in an abusive way. They've pulled them over when they weren't supposed to get pulled over. They've illegally searched their car or detained them. Like everyone's had that at least once. And I think if we all realize that, yeah.
And I think,
would it be hashtag me blue?
Right. And even the people who are like coming onto your Facebook page or whatever and like supporting cops, right? I'm almost sure they've all had a bad negative interaction with cops or know someone who has.
Exactly.
Like or
they've changed their behavior around cops to make sure.
Right. If you just shut up and do whatever they say.
Or they're being nice on Facebook because they know a cop and they don't want that cop to be mean to them later.
You know, shoot their dog. Yes, exactly.
Oh, you want to hear the best joke I heard about cops?
Always.
Cops are like a box of chocolate. They'll kill your dog.
I mean, it's terrible to laugh because they will, but yes.
Because they will, yeah.
So if you want more of that, material, like such like anti-cop stuff like that, T. Greg Doucette, who has the big mega thread about everything, he also runs a podcast called Fiskamall, and he just reports on stuff like that all the time. It's a great resource.
He's great. He retweeted me once or twice.
Yeah, he's funny too. He's great.
Yeah, he's great. Loves hip hop.
Gentlemen?
So I would rebrand the podcast as Misconception Correction. Or something along those lines, where we would take a common misconception that either one of us has or someone we know has, and then we would address why it is, in fact, a misconception.
Sure. I love
that. It's good mental hygiene. I like it.
I love that. Tim?
I would do atheist Bible study. So each episode would be a passage from the Bible that is regularly misused by Christians. With a look into the historical context, what does it say if you go back to the original language in which that passage was written? Which of the four authors do we think this was? Where the interpretation that currently exists is coming from, and also possibly where that exact interpretation is contradicted in other parts of the Bible. So
I love it.
That would be my plan.
It's a lot of homework.
Ooh. All right.
It is a lot of homework. It's a lot more work. That's why I'd prefer this podcast we have.
Yeah. All right, like question that. Question three.
Okay. What's your go-to pandemic comfort food?
Bread. I've bread and bread-based foods like biscuits and cookies and bread. Yeah, I've been baking a lot of tasty things.
I've been making batches of chili crisp, which is like a sort of Chinese condiment. I've been making it onion free so that we can have it in the house. That's why I'm making it. And I have been putting that shit on everything.
Can confirm.
Like toast in the morning, chili crisp.
Yep.
Nice.
It's make stuff delicious. Whatever you put it on. I put it on vanilla ice cream and it was fucking amazing.
Yep.
Because the chilies the flakes end up having like a texture like peanuts on a sundae, and because I use peanut oil for the sauce or for its oil, it starts to get kind of caramely on cold ice cream when it hits that temperature. It's perfect. It's so good.
Huh. That's good. Since we are going with comfort food, I'm going to have to say that mine is taking a glass about half full of spicy V8, adding Bloody Mary mix, and then soaking dill pickles in it.
Nice.
So you're making virgin Bloody Marys.
Virgin Bloody Marys, but I don't drink the Bloody Mary. I just soak the dill pickles in it.
You just want the ghost.
I just want the
alcoholism.
Dill pickles with a little bit of tomato sauce on it.
What happens with the sauce stuff? Does it get chucked or does it go?
Eventually it gets chucked. I mean, about half of it gets into my mouth on the pickles.
Sure.
But eventually it gets chucked. Yes.
What about you, Joshua?
Every Sunday I've made a point of making a good breakfast, and mainly that is consisting of like pancakes. I've been making pancakes almost every weekend of the pandemic. This weekend I switched off because I was like, you know what, let's change it up. Let's start making like omelets and let's get good at making omelets. So I made an omelet this last weekend.
What do you put on pancakes? Just straight butter and syrup, or do you do fancy other things?
I syrup makes me ill.
Yes.
I can't take too much of it. So I've really liked using honey instead.
Okay.
And that's worked really well. Yeah.
I do fruit and whipped cream because I'm not a syrups, honey.
I'm a big fan of fruit and whipped cream.
Yeah. Like any syrup tends to make my gut sad. So,
right. Yeah. I never understood because people just drench them in syrup. And I'm like, you know what? I like a little bit of sweetness.
Because you're eating a tree. That's why.
So maybe it's
drinking a tree. But
all right, okay. Question four.
Okay. You can ask any artist, living or dead, to produce one piece of artwork exclusively for you. Who's the artist and what do you ask for?
Is it specifically like visual art, or can it be any kind of artist?
What any kind of art? Like, so dead director, for example, you can have them make one more movie for you.
Mm-hmm. Any kind of art.
In fact, that's my answer. I'll go right before you.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
Up a little bit here. My answer to this is the Japanese anime director Satoshi Kon. He died really early in his life. He made Paprika, Perfect Blue, Millennium Actress. Fantastic movies. Very visually arresting. I would like him to make something personally for me, and then I would give it to everybody. I would give it to the world.
Of course. That's very kind.
Oh man, the answer I had prepared was very much with a set interpretation of art as like physical piece of art. So I'm going to stick with that answer because otherwise I could think about this forever. So my two favorite comic book artists are Alex Ross and Phil Noto, and they are both alive and they are both very different in their style. And I'm not sure which I would choose to make the large canvas mural of original comic book art that I'd love for them to one of them to do like an entire wall, but we are not going to live in this house forever. And that seems like a waste of original art. So a large canvas that we can take with us somewhere, like something like Vigo big, right? Like a 12 foot by 8 foot or something canvas. I think that would be great.
I would like there to be a Miyazaki movie about me, but it's magical girl style or like very whimsical. And it's me in the land of the goats, forest girl. It's kind of a thing. Like picture Kiki's Delivery Service, but there's like forest goats element and that kind
goat
of thing.
Spirits.
Yeah, exactly. Spirit I goats. Think that would be very cool.
I just bought a D&D like module off of DM's Guild that's all like Miyazaki based stories.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. So, Tim, what would you pick?
Well, since we can go with directors, I'm gonna go with Akira Kurosawa because I really appreciate his visual style. And I assume that since Akira Kurosawa is alive, I can also have Toshirô Mifune be alive. So I want – and since I've always been an obnoxious fan of Westerns, I want Akira Kurosawa to remake Silverado with Toshirô Mifune as one of the leads. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I want an Akira Kurosawa Silverado.
As a samurai flick, though.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Not like
that'd be great.
Him
I like
doing
that.
Western. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not as a Western. No, as a samurai film, that would kick ass. And I would watch that on repeat for about 3 weeks.
You know what I like about that answer, Tim, is that you took my question and you interpreted the rule in a different way.
Oh, boy.
In a way that got the outcome that you wanted.
I love it. That's America.
That's America.
Question 5.
Question 5 is like cats. Are they best or bestest?
Oh,
bestest.
Oh, they're the bestest.
Lately, this one's just the best. He's been screaming a lot. He's going through one of his screaming seasons.
I think it's whenever we have the windows open in the spring or fall, he just gets crazy and just fucking screams.
Bengals scream like they're dying. And Nathan Gerber, friend of the show who is living with us right now, he'd been over a bunch of times for Ville and he thought he knew what Triscuit sounded like when he was really screaming. But now he really knows. And it is a sound that makes people think that the cat is dying.
The other day, Nate was asleep and Triscuit just jumped up on his bed and just laid down on the edge of his bed and just started screaming.
Screaming in his face.
Just
love cats. I love them.
They're the bestest.
They are. They're
the bestest.
I have never met a cat I didn't like, but I've met lots of cats that didn't like me.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Joshua. This is wonderful. We keenly appreciate your legal mind and the ability for us to employ it at our behest.
We like the rest of your mind, too.
I think employ is the wrong word. But
I mean, he's here.
I am. It's nice to put on my lawyer hat and talk about the court. So I love talking about the court. So it has its ups and downs. If I want to give your viewers any more like advice about the court is like, just, you know, it's a real political institution, treat it as such. That's what it is.
if there were a website that was a great resource for, let's say, the layperson to go and maybe like learn about the law or learn about the way things work in this country, is there one that you would point them to?
You know, I in terms of like SCOTUS blog, I think is pretty like open. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're not run by the SCOTUS. It's professionals like talking about the law. That's pretty good. And it tells you a lot of information about like what's coming up on the docket. And like, it has some explainers about like the cases in front of the court. I go to Slate a lot for Mark Joseph Stern's commentary.
Okay.
Partially because I appreciate him and I appreciate Dahlia Litwick, who's also at Slate, and they do an amicus podcast, I believe what Dahlia's podcast is. I think that's really good for people who are interested in the court. There's tons of other like Supreme Court podcasts too, if you look.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. Here's hoping that in 6 months there's a country to talk about on the next show. We've been Geeks Without God. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, all that stuff, we have a new place you can find the podcast, right? Didn't we just get added somewhere? And Nick's going to look at iHeartRadio. You can now find us on iHeartRadio.
I hear they're number one for podcasts.
So if you go there and you want to rate us there, just, you know, tell them how great we are. Like, we're perfect. Anyway, this has been great. Hang in there, everyone. We're going to make it through one way or another. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
So if the Supreme Court was made of trees, could we stack it like cordwood?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Unconscious in a giant frog or something?